Hello, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much, we chain them up to our beds and just,
I like books so much, I didn't like this book.
I just thought, have we, like, said our names in a while?
No.
I'm Gabs.
I'm Ben.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, in the unlikely event that you're not one of our friends already.
This week we read 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James.
50 Shades of by E.L.
Also, I like how she's following in the proud tradition of, if you're a woman author, don't let them know your first name.
Yeah, that's true.
She's like, I'm gonna be J.K. Rowling.
Not that you wouldn't have guessed a woman was writing this by the second page.
Yeah. Actually, about that.
This book is actually dripping with female hormones.
And I don't think men tend to write romance novels. Although it's kind of interesting. Any of the authors who are commercially successful and make a living off of writing, a lot of them, romance authors.
Yeah.
Because romance books sell so well.
Yeah, they really do. Well, that's because they're girl porn.
Well, yeah, actually, they really essentially are, because so much porn is gross and misogynistic.
Yes.
Women want sex, but with, like, the we want to have sex but with feeling.
Some romance, right.
Yeah, and the guys are just like, I just want to see a penis going into a vag.
I don't need all that boring consent.
And I actually will give it that, that the sex scenes in this book... while I hated both of the main characters, sex scenes were actually written fairly well, aside from the use of my sex for vagina, and the use of behind for her butt, and her, like, every single time, and that kind of distracted me, but, like, sex was actually pretty well written.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, it definitely wasn't that.
And I liked it better than the porn that I've seen, so.
Yeah, well, again, porn is... What
definitely male driven.
Yeah, it definitely is.
For any women out there, if you want to private message me and learn about the female driven friendly porn erotica, let me know.
Beautiful.
Hook you up. Well, the reason we chose this book is because it's on top of all of the bestseller lists.
All three volumes are at the top three spots of every category of the New York Times bestseller list. Well, for adult fiction, anyway.
Yeah, not for, like, YA.
Not for YA, not for nonfiction. And for ebooks, the bundle of all three is in the top four spots, with the other top four being the three individual volumes.
Yeah.
And that has been true for all of those categories for weeks and probably months now, actually.
Yeah, this book is actually insanely popular right now.
Yeah. It's... like, beyond belief how popular it is, almost.
And I actually thought it was kind of funny, because our friend Kim, before the book was published, a couple weeks before, she goes, hey, have you heard about this new book that's supposed to be, like, the new bestseller? I was like, what? Yeah, it's a Twilight fanfiction converted into a real novel? And I kind of laughed it off, and then, like, 3 weeks later, it was like, 50 Shades of Grey everywhere, and I went, no!
This giant sensation.
So that's the reason we read it. So our spoiler policy will actually be in full effect for today. If you are interested in reading 50 Shades of Grey and don't want it spoiled, then you should turn off the podcast and wait, because we're going to talk about it.
Yes, we will spoil everything. So if you're someone who just cannot function if any aspect of something is spoiled for you, then now would be the time to get out, because I'm about to tell you that they break up at the end and I was gleeful.
I fucking hate Christian Grey so much.
I hated both characters so much that by about chapter 7, I didn't want either of them to be happy.
Yeah, I never hated Anna as much as you. Most of my rage was directed towards Christian, but...
I think if I had not been living in Anna's head, I wouldn't have hated her as much, but I was so freaking tired of all her bullshit.
Maybe it's because I knew that it came from Twilight fanfiction, and she's so much better than Bella, that I was like, by comparison.
I have no basis for comparison, by the way. Those of you out there, I have not read Twilight. And actually, knowing that Anna's better than Bella, I'm not sure I ever intend to read Twilight.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just really quick. This was originally a trilogy of novel-length fan fiction on the internet called Masters of the Universe. It's actually, if you've read Twilight, the parallels are... A lot of the character parallels are easy to see. Oh my goodness. Obviously, Anna is Bella, Christian Grey is Edward, Jose is Jacob. You know, oh, change him to a different minority. And then there are a couple other ones kind of thrown in here and there that you can pick out. And yeah, I guess they were super popular on the internet. My understanding is they were really popular. A publisher kind of stumbled across them, thought, oh, this might translate well into original fiction, and essentially just had her change all the names over, I think. I saw, like, a side-by-side comparison of different passages, and all the passages they picked out were really similar. I don't know if that was, like, a random passage choosing or if they just found ones that were, like, the same. But I was actually reading a little bit about it, and I think publishers are starting to see fanfiction more and more as, like, a plausible book possibility.
Well, if you know anyone who reads fanfiction, maybe you're one of those people, there's actually some decent stuff out there.
Yeah.
There are some really good writers who are writing fanfiction, and, I mean...
I would agree with that.
Most people who are good writers and write stories, or book-length stories even, don't ever have much in the way of commercial success. And getting published on a small scale without really making money from it is actually a giant pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So fan fiction makes a lot of sense if you're a writer, actually, in a lot of ways. If you just have to get it out of you and you're not trying to make a living.
Yeah, and I actually kind of... I really like fan fiction for people who want to write but don't really know where to start. Because you have, like, a set of characters in a world that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just take them... And then you can work on plotting and development that way without having to come up with, like, backstory and all that stuff. And a lot of fan fiction is, you know, like, 4-page, these two characters are going to hook up type
right.
of stories.
Oh, I can finally put my, I can finally get my ship that I wanted for that whole
yeah.
series, and they never put them together.
Yeah, and it actually helps, because you don't have to, like, be daunted by, oh, I have to write a full-length something. You're like, I can write, like, a 5-page, plotless, fluffy whatever. And I think it helps people, like, gain confidence. And some writers, not all writers, but a lot of people, after they write fan fiction for a couple years, they're then say, okay, I'm comfortable enough now. I want to kind of start trying to tackle my own stuff, since I can never really get my fan fiction published. again, this one's kind of an exception because it was set in an alternate universe. If you wrote a Harry Potter fan fiction... in the exact same world, it was just, like, 5 years later, you couldn't really, that wouldn't translate.
It would take a lot more editing to turn it into something that you wouldn't get sued for. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Be like, oh, Harold and Randy are off to do magic. Oh, this is just crap. So, anyway, that's our huge introduction into this story to give you some background on it. And the reason this one gets away with it is it has nothing to do with vampires at all.
Yeah, there are actually no supernatural elements in it. I don't know if that was true for the original fanfiction. I guess it's not even relevant because that's not what we're reading.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are no supernatural elements. I knew because I had heard before that it was Twilight fanfiction, but based on my loose understanding of the Twilight universe, which is essentially seeing a couple of the movies with the riff tracks... Like, I was not drawing Twilight parallels other than that the triangle of Christian, Anna, and Jose were clearly Edward, Bella, and Jacob.
Yeah. And that really is the strongest parallel. Again, I don't know how similar it is in fanfiction, but it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
So.
Let's move on.
This book is very obviously a romance novel.
Yeah, so this is a genre we haven't tackled yet. I really have not... I mean, maybe you could make an argument that Pride and Prejudice is kind of a forerunner to a romance novel. I mean,
yeah.
There's obviously not sex in it.
Although, some people classify Pride and Prejudice more as a forerunner to, like, the quote-unquote chick lit genre.
Right.
Which has the romance without necessarily all the sex scenes.
Well, for my money, I would tend to agree with that, but they're also closely related that it's hard to draw a line and just say, this is this and this is this.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, this is not a genre, certainly a romantic type of story where graphic sex scenes were an important element of the storytelling.
Yes.
It's not something we've covered on this podcast yet, and honestly, it's not something that I've read in any capacity.
Oh.
Well, I have. So here we are, this male-female divide. I have the internet. I can download dirty pictures. I don't need to read about it.
I mean, a lot of the romance I've read is because Mom and I went to the library and we said, let's read romance novels. I have read some based on pure, like, interest. I have read pornographic fan fiction, which is basically the same thing.
All right.
So, I feel like I have a pretty good amount of experience with it. I've read, surprisingly, the romance, like, anything I would categorize as stuff in the romance genre that I've read, all the fan fiction has been better than all the published stuff.
Okay, then. Interesting.
In my opinion.
Interesting. I have to say, I don't have a lot of exposure to it, and this is my first example, and I'm sure that anyone out there who reads romance stuff on a regular basis would tell me this is not the place to go for your first example. I think the bestselleriness of it might be a good indicator of that. Actually, I really got the impression that this was catering to an audience of people who wanted to be adventurous but didn't know what adventurous sex actually is.
People who read Twilight fanfiction.
Yeah, probably.
I'm just insulting everyone who likes Twilight, whatever.
I know, I don't really want to throw out the middle-aged housewife thing, but that's totally the stereotype that pops into my head.
You know, that I mean, on the internet, you have that group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women who don't have necessarily a job or only have a part-time job, how are they going to fill their time? Oh, they can write creatively, which I actually think is really awesome. And then you have, like, the genre of the teenagers and the college students who are like, I don't want to study anymore, what am I going to do? I'm going to read fan fiction porn on the internet. And a lot of them don't have experience with sex, so you have that element of it too, like the virgins who want to read about, like, kind of kinky sex or whatever.
Well, for Anna, that would be a self-insertion character.
Yeah, although the author we should mention is a married woman, so presumably she has had sex. and then I think for, like, the community, once it got published, because it has been marketed as this big kinky BDSM novel, I think a lot of people are buying it based off of that. Like, ooh, what's that going to be about? Like, that's going to be more interesting than typical romance, right?
Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about, because people go, oh, it's going to be kinky, but they're people who aren't themselves kinky.
Yeah.
And so they have no idea that this is not, in fact, very kinky.
Yeah.
But more on that later.
Let's go with plot synopsis.
Yes.
We have two. Which one do you want to do?
Why don't you read the first one?
Okay. Jeez, oh my, holy cow, wow, my inner goddess is jumping for joy.
Or alternately, he's so fucking hot.
Yeah.
There you go. I just summarized 80% of the words in this book.
That's actually the other thing that reminded me of Twilight was people talk about how hot Edward is all the time in those books.
Oh, really?
And that definitely transferred over to this.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's actually a thing.
I did not know that was a character trait of his.
Yeah. Because vampires are hot, man.
I guess.
Bastard. The first synopsis, jeez oh my, holy cow, wow. My inner goddess is jumping for joy. That's because Anna's inner monologue has those words in it a lot.
Yeah, you could simulate her inner monologue by using all of those phrases and nothing else, and it wouldn't be that far off.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of lost count of the number of times she said, oh my, when something intrigued her. but sometimes it felt really, like, I guess I think of oh my as something people say when they don't say stuff like, fuck, you know? Like, it's a little more mild.
Oh my.
And she would say it at times where I felt like swears were necessary, and then she would swear at times where I wouldn't necessarily think a swear was necessary. So, you know, Christian would, like, hit her with the riding crop, and then she'd go, oh my, that crop is trailing down to my sex. And I was like, okay.
And you can say anything overtly sexual and follow it up with a geez. That would be accurate.
This is so fucking hot. Jeez.
Jeez. I want to fuck you right now. Jeez. Stop biting your lip.
God. Fuck him. No, like, not literally fuck him, but, like...
Yeah, don't fuck him, because we don't want him to be happy.
Kill him with fire. The best, my favorite Christianism was at the beginning when they kept getting on elevators together, and that made them, like, randomly magically want to have sex with each other every time the elevator doors closed.
There's something about elevators.
Yeah, and a couple times he said, there's something about elevators. And I was like, what?
I think I'm going to adopt that one.
Yeah. I decided I'm going to write a play called There's Something About Elevators. I don't know what's going to happen in it yet, but it's happening.
I request that the male lead be based on me.
we'll consider it.
Not if it's sexual. You're not going to write that about your brother.
Oh, Jesus God. So the setting of the story is in, this is the other thing, Seattle, Washington, Portland area. Twilight takes place in the Northwest.
The Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Although that part's not terribly important, to be honest.
Well, it's not like there aren't a lot of people who live in Seattle.
Yeah. And there's nothing, like, Northwest specific.
Yeah, it's true. It's not important. It's not like they're running around in the woods. They're just going from a college campus to a larger city. That's essentially the setting.
Yeah.
So it could be, you know, well, if you want to do the really boring version of it, it could be like Lawrence and Kansas
City. Yeah, you want to do the Midwest version. Columbia to St. Louis.
That's right.
Because you need a city with a publishing house. I'm not convinced Kansas City has any.
Champagne to Chicago?
Chicago to Chicago, fuck, man.
Yeah, that's right. Chicago's already a college town.
Yeah. And the narrator is first person, and that leads us to our protagonist, Anastasia Steele.
Anastasia Steele, the least interesting woman alive.
I would say she's the least interesting, because there are female characters in the book less interesting than her.
Yeah, but none of them get more than 17 words.
That's true. Anastasia's deal, Anna. Her deal, she's about to graduate from college. She has never had a boyfriend before. According to her inner dialogue, she has never been interested in a guy ever. Even though there are, like, three dudes in the book who want to bang her. She's just never been attracted to anyone.
Yeah, you know, as is natural for a 22-year-old girl. That is completely unnatural for a 22.
Oh, wait, you mean me getting drunk and making out with a dude in my kitchen in college was weird? Uh-oh. I gotta rethink my life.
How can a girl go from age 12 to 12 and 2 months without being interested in a guy at some point?
Or a girl. I mean, I guess...
They're hormones!
Exactly. Like, the fact that she'd never done anything with a guy, and she's about to graduate college, like, didn't sit right with me. I mean, you can be a virgin graduating college, like, that's not even weird.
No, not at all.
Like, that's fine. But the fact she'd never kissed anyone, and again, there are people who have never kissed anyone or about to graduate college, and if you are one of them, I'm not insulting you, I promise, and you're not, like, some kind of weirdo freak. But my guess is that if you've never kissed anyone when you're 22 years old, you've probably been interested in kissing somebody before that point. You've probably had a crush on someone. You've probably been kind of sidling up to a guy at a party, hoping something's going to happen, you know? Like, that's my guess, anyway.
If you're 22 and you've never been interested in someone ever, the odds are approaching safe that you're asexual, I think.
Yeah. And of course, you know, stuff can change, but I just, when she said, you know, like, oh, I've I've never held hands with a guy.
Really?
I was like, what? Like, I mean, comparatively, my sex life is incredibly boring, and I held hands with a guy, like, when I was 14.
Right,
like,
that's crazy.
Come on! like, give me something.
It's not even that daring. Like, you could ask anybody, almost. You just want to hold hands? Like, that's a little weird. I guess, sure.
Yeah, okay.
And why not?
That's kind of cute.
If you get anything out of this.
Yeah. I just found it kind of odd that she'd never even tried. It was just weird to me.
Yep.
I didn't really buy that.
She'd never met Christian Grey before. Well, so you see, there's kind of a parallel there, though. Because he has the terrifyingly competent thing going on that some characters in fiction do. For some reason, I associate that with romance plots, but that's probably not entirely fair. But, like, he's good at a million things. Anything that comes up, it's like, oh, actually, he speaks fluent French. Actually, he is a great pianist. Oh, he is the CEO of a 40,000-person company, and he's 27 years old.
Which I feel like should be impossible.
And he has a helicopter license, and he flies gliders. And... what? And he's freaking hot, and he dances well, and stop it. Like,
and yeah, his parents are rich and both doctors, and his sister's like a designer in Paris. It's like, what?
People
the fuck?
Like this do not exist. So to go with his perfection, I guess, though he does have all this, I guess he's not perfect is kind of the point.
Yeah.
But to go with all these more exterior characteristics that seem like they should be perfect, you have the unspoiled virgin Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how that pairing goes together, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe that's why it appeals to everybody? Maybe that's why it sells so many copies?
I don't know. I personally thought Christian was, like, the biggest douchebag in the world.
I feel like if you're reading this, you shouldn't think that he's hot, even though it's pointed out that he's so hot it's like overwhelming and distracting to all women.
Yeah, like he'll sit down at a bar and the waitress comes up and splutters and blushes asking for their order because he's that attractive.
Damn.
It's like, no?
But I only have your word for it, and then like you have his behavior to back that up, and it just doesn't do anything for anybody, I hope.
Yeah, to give... I mean, this isn't a perfect parallel, because Gone with the Wind isn't, like, straight-up romance, because there's not sex in it, but to kind of parallel, you have Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind, who is physically described and is apparently, you know, attractive, but that's not really his whole thing. Like, people don't talk constantly about him being attractive. You just kind of get the description of him. But then that fucking bastard is so goddamn charming that by, like, halfway through the book, I'm completely in love with Rhett Butler. Like, this is the most attractive man in the world. Even though he's actually, like, just as much of a jackass as Christian. Because it's him, he knows it and embraces it. And I just, like, love him. And he's like, okay, he's hot. And everyone who reads that book will tell you, like, Ashley's a whiny bitch and we don't care. And Rhett's really fucking hot. And it's kind of the same thing here, is that Christian is supposed to be really hot, but he acts like such a fucking... craphead that...
Well, I think elements of him are supposed to come across as being charming and endearing, but it never makes it there.
No. God, no.
And so, I mean, let's just run it down right now.
Yeah.
Why not? Number one, top of the list, controlling freak.
Yes. And this is one of, like, because his dark secret is he's into BDSM. And he's a dominant. So he's looking for a submissive. And for anyone who's, like, just never heard these terms before...
You're who this book was written for.
Yeah, actually. Essentially, dominants like to be completely dominant in the bedroom. That's why they're called that. And submissives do whatever they say. Sometimes it's more mild, like, they'll just kind of handcuff you up and then, like, do you however they want. Sometimes it's... more extreme. That's when you see, like, the gimp masks and the gag balls and the dominatrix type characters. People who are, like, really, really into the slave master stuff. They're very varying degrees of it, for sure. But apparently, so that's what he is, and he says, well, because I'm a dominant, I just want to be in control of everything and everybody all the time. And so he just comes across as, like, I mean, he's, like, such a micromanaging, like, prick. He's like, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? Sit down. Go brush your teeth.
Yeah.
You will not drive your car again until I get you a new one. And I was like, some guy said that to me. I'd flip him off and be like, fuck you. No. Or the food contract, which I was glad that she was pissed about, too, was like, you will not eat in between meals, except if it's fruit. And I was like, go to hell.
And here's your approved list for food you can eat during meals.
Yeah.
And you have to have X numbers of sleep a night.
And this amount of exercise. And he's all, you know, saying it's for your own good because he's an impossible sex robot. But
well, and then even on a smaller level, just kind of he's the boyfriend who gets pissed off if you don't text or email constantly to let him know what's up.
Yeah, like...
And in the same way that people do that, where it's, well, I'm just so concerned for you, I want to know that you're safe. And that behavior pisses me off in real life, and so here's this guy taking it to the nth degree.
It's actually abusive behavior.
I agree, that's why it pisses me off.
Yeah, okay, so he buys her a BlackBerry because he wants to know where she is at all times.
Oh, God.
And then she says...
Buys a BlackBerry right around the time that I am realizing I'm going to hate every email exchange they ever have.
Oh, God, they're awful. But she sends him, I'm at work, I'll let you know when I get home. Then she gets home, she's packing with her roommate, she's drinking, she's hanging out, she doesn't think to text him, okay. And she finds her phone, and he's, like, called her multiple times, texted her multiple times, he sent her emails. He's like, you told me you were going to contact me when you got home. And then she, like, just mentions a guy friend, and he, like, explodes.
Oh.
Why were you talking to Jose? What were you doing with him? And I was like, wow.
Jealous and controlling. What a charming combination.
Yeah, that's, like, I know part of the fantasy is, like, that someone will be, like, possessive of you, I guess. Like, that they want all of you, and that's in some way supposed to be attractive, but...
Right. I've heard people make that argument before, actually.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, if I can't go home and drink a glass of red wine with my roommate and forget to call my boyfriend after work, and he gets pissed at me, like...
He's not long for this world.
Yeah, I mean, if he says, oh, hey, I thought you were going to call me when you got off work, and I was kind of waiting around, I'd be like, oh, sorry, like, I'd feel bad. But if he was like, calling and texting me constantly, I like to be in contact when you say you're going to be in contact. Because, like, that's... I imagine all of Christian's lines is him, like, snarling at her, you know? Like,
yeah, seriously, actually.
Yeah, so there's that. And then there's the fact that he buys her ridiculously over-the-top expensive gifts and forces her to keep them.
It's just... It's the sense of scale, and he points out, well, I'm super rich, and spending, you know, 30 grand to me is not a big deal. And it's just, it's all out of proportion. Like, that's not how you treat people that you have just met.
Yeah.
And so it's not a control thing. It's not a, oh, well, here's finally this girl that he actually likes. And so he wants her to have all this awesome stuff. Like, it doesn't come across as sweet. It comes across as a little creepy. And this is one of the few places where I actually kind of agree with her inner monologue, where she keeps, like, he gives her something expensive, and in her head she's going, ho! I'm like, well, that's totally the vibe you would get if some dude was doing that.
Yeah, like, he's like, well, I mean, also, because their first conversation outside of the interview was, I want you to be my sub. I don't want to be in a relationship with you that has any emotional or romantic attachments. This is going to be all about sex. And then he's like, by the way, let me buy you shit.
Well, like, which is part of the arrangement in his head. Like, that's part of the control. Like, I want to do this, so you have to take it.
Yeah. And she actually says, like, you're making me feel like a prostitute at one point, which...
Which, to his credit, also makes him a little uncomfortable. Like, he's upset by that. He does have a couple of redeeming qualities.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a controlling douchebag. I would never date this guy.
Well, I'm not...
ever.
All right, so I say a couple of redeeming qualities. I don't mean things that make him likable, necessarily. I mean things that prove that he is not a horrible human being, just a straight-up dickhead.
Yeah, I mean, point one in his favor is that he is very concerned with consent, which I appreciate.
He is more about consent than every male character in every book we've read so far combined, probably.
Yeah.
Like, it is so important to him.
He constantly says, you say no, you say a safe word, you say stop, like, he will, immediately.
Yeah, and actually one of the scenes, one of the more conflicting scenes is he's threatening to spank her again, and she says, no, please don't hurt me, and he's really rattled by that.
Yeah.
Like, it's really upsetting to him that she would say no there, and not because it's a control thing, but because he thinks he's put her in this position where she's uncomfortable and scared.
Yeah.
Which is really to his credit, because he sure doesn't show any sign of thinking any of that until it's right at the brink like that.
Yeah. And I mean, his problem is that he said he's had 15 submissives before her, but every single one of them has been part of the community. Every single one of them has been, like, a submissive person.
They're pros, basically.
Yeah. So they already know about it. They're fine with everything. She's a virgin. She's never heard of this shit. She's never done any of it. And he's just like, oh, by the way, this is what I'm going to do to you. And she's, I mean, understandably terrified by it.
Well, yeah, because he's laying all this straight on her. And, you know, to her, vanilla sex is scary because she's never done it before.
Yeah.
She has no idea. And, well, he really goes about the whole approach to the kinkiness incorrectly when you get right down to it. Anyway.
So I think we're about to take our conversation back to Anna.
Yeah, since we didn't really talk much about her.
I got too derailed by the Christian hate machine.
Well, I actually think that it's a symptom of what Anna really is, because I maintain that she's a really boring character. She just is a wide-eyed virgin. That's how I would describe her.
Yeah. And actually, one of the things I didn't bring up earlier when I was talking about, I don't think it's very believable that she's as innocent as she is I feel like there's this trope in literature that if you're a virgin, you have to be innocent, or, like, not willing, or don't have a lot of experience, and I kind of take offense to that, because, you know, I was one of those people who didn't lose my virginity until I was older, and people would say, like, oh, why? Like, are you waiting till marriage? Do you just not want to? I was like, no, I'm interested. I don't want to have sex with a jackass. But, like, yeah, I'm extremely sexual. Like, I just haven't found someone I'm willing to do it with yet.
Waiting for someone trustworthy to come along.
Yeah, and I feel like it's common to be like, oh, she's a pure virgin. And I was like, I was anything but. Like, I had friends who were having sex that I was dirtier than and more knowledgeable about sex than. So, I just think that's obnoxious.
Well, it is silly. And wide-eyed in Anna's case definitely doesn't mean unwilling. Because
yes,
she wants to basically fuck his brains out.
And, all the time.
Yeah, and gets the opportunity and loves it.
Yeah.
And they haven't even gotten into any of the not actually kinky stuff yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she's at least not totally following that model. It's more just like the everything wows her.
Yes. I mean, and the people around her are, like, a lot more loud than she is. So it's like, oh, my roommate, who's a great journalist, is interested in all of this stuff and, like, pesters me with questions, and, like, her family's rich. And then Christian Grey, who we already mentioned, CEO, 27, rich, all that stuff. My friend who's Jose, who's, you know, a stereotype, but he's still, you know, a photographer, and he's, like, a really, he's got a passion driving him, and all these other people around her are, like, so loud and animated, and then she's just, like, quiet, like.
She kind of likes books.
Kind of likes books. Doesn't talk a lot. Doesn't really seem to follow any great passion, like, Yeah. When they covered her interview with
I was about to bring that up.
The publisher, I was like, man, you sound like a really boring interview, first of all.
Yep.
Well, she didn't get into any of the details. Like, he sent me questions, he asked me questions, and I answered them well.
Right. So well, I gave him like well-prepared responses.
Yeah.
She gave him her elevator pitch, it sounds like.
Yeah.
To open up, and then they ask about her extracurriculars, and she's got nothing.
She's a member of a couple literary clubs, which I'm pretty sure most colleges don't have more than one, so I don't really know how she managed that.
You know.
But, okay, I'll accept it. Maybe she was part of, like, the mystery lit club and the classics lit club right. or something. Although sounds like she only reads classics.
Sounds like that is her primary interest. I mean, it's hard to say because she references one classic. I guess she referenced Little Women, too.
Yeah, we know that she likes Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
And she made a passing reference to Little Women, and I don't think she mentioned any other classics.
I'm trying to think now. I don't know if she did or not.
There were, like, a good half dozen Tess references.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big one.
That was clearly her... Well, she said it was her favorite, and she liked Thomas Hardy, and...
Yeah.
Then, apparently, she didn't even know how to reference it appropriately according to the way that modern English scholars would interpret it.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and talk about it. Tess of the D'Urbervilles a little bit, just because I think most people who aren't English majors...
Yeah, I don't know it at all, by the way.
I read it in college because I was an English major. Much more boisterous than Anna, though. I think we've proved that reading doesn't mean you have to be quiet. But... We read Tess of the D'Urbervilles, and the very, very basic plot is just girl from a poor family, and her family has aspirations at being higher than they are, and so their last name is D'Urbyville, and her father goes back and finds, oh, we're related to the D'Urbervilles, who is this wealthy family, like, very tangentially. Let's see if we can put our daughter in their household and get her well off so we can raise our family name. And that does not work. Okay, that's the setup for the story. So they make references to Alex D'Urbervilles and to a guy named Angel, both in the book. And she makes, like, he says, you know, will you choose purity or debasement? I don't remember the exact.
Right.
And she says debasement. And they make all these sly, sexy references about debasement. But the thing, as an English major, that struck me completely the wrong way about this conversation is Tessa's debasement is not sexy at all. She gets raped by her distant cousin. She shows up at the house, she's totally overcome by the wealth, doesn't know how to handle it. He sees, oh, innocent little country girl, and takes her out to like a country ball, basically, and she is forced to walk back from it on the way home at night by herself because he, like, has disappeared, and while she's walking home from it, he catches her and rapes her. So...
Not exactly consensual sex, but with your hands bound.
Yeah, and then you have the fact that she is pregnant from it. The baby dies. They won't bury it in the Christian cemetery because they refuse to baptize it because she wasn't married. She's, like, insanely depressed, kind of understandably.
Yeah.
And then the Angel character she meets, she's interested in starting a romantic relationship with him. He thinks she's wonderful. When he finds out what happens to her, his idea of her innocence is so shattered that he basically refuses to have anything to do with her anymore. For a big chunk of the book. When we talked about it in class, my professor basically said Thomas Hardy wrote the book as a big commentary about how fucked up the morality was at the time. Like, this woman is getting punished every step of the way by society for getting raped when none of it was her fault. But that's what would happen to women back then. If you got raped, you were no longer pure and you couldn't get married. Even if it was... Well, I mean, rape's never your fault. So, like, you know, even though it's not your fault at all. It's society shaming you.
Right.
And that's the moral of the book. Like, Thomas Hardy is being, you know, progressive for his time. He's not saying, like, here's this girl who chooses this dark, rich figure. Like, that parallel doesn't work. And I was really, really bothered by the two of them, like, sending each other test references. I was like, she's read the book, presumably, like, multiple times.
Right.
She never mentions that word to him once, Christian, who I would forgive if he'd never read it and just, like...
like, knew she liked it.
So yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah.
And, okay. Well, so, like, none of the issues in that have parallels to the issues in 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, I think, like, the innocent young girl overcome by a man with a dark side thing is supposed to be the parallel there.
I guess. Well, it may be a little bit of just trying to make Christian look as fucked up as possible, but he isn't really that fucked up. He's just kind of an asshole.
Yeah, and it's just not... He's at least into consent enough.
Right.
That if he was in the book, he would not have done that. You know? Like,
he's great at consent. He's bad at marketing.
Yeah, exactly. So...
He's a solid product. He just hasn't figured out how to package it yet.
Yeah. So we know Anna's an English major, but, I mean, I don't think she's a very good one.
She doesn't get that impression.
That's a... I mean, it's a great book, but... what the hell?
Well, you know. So, yeah, she doesn't... And then the self-doubt part of it, too, because I... characters who aren't confident frequently drive me crazy. You know, we could make our Joe Christmas reference here, but we had this pretty extended on Tess, so let's not. But, like, she just can't figure things out. She can't consider anything straightforwardly. I mean, some of the other characters in the book actually tell her you tend to overthink things, and she definitely does, like, to an annoying degree, since you're living inside her head the whole time. And just takes and retakes the same territory a dozen times, and I get tired of reading it. This book is over 500 pages long. It could be 300 pages long.
Yeah, the conflict is, should I be with him? He doesn't want the same thing as I do, but I like the sex. And that's basically what happens, like,
yeah,
five or six times, and that's the book.
Yep.
I was really glad when she finally said, nope, can't do it anymore. Like, oh, thank God something happened.
Me too, because they were both grief-stricken and I wanted them to be sad.
Yeah. This also definitely had the literary trope of, like, I think the book takes place over the course of, like, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. And it's relatively short.
Like, she is madly in love with him by the end of, like, week one.
Yep.
And they just met.
Yep. Though... despoiling a virgin can sometimes have that effect.
Yeah, I guess so. But,
It's still every, like, every fictional romance ever, almost, I have issues with, because they happen so fast.
Yeah, it just feels like a...
like a romantic comedy never takes place. It's never, like, a scene here and there over a year. It's always, like, three intense weeks or something.
Yeah. Or like a weekend. Or...
right. Or like three intense months maybe at the outside. Yeah. And...
well, Harry Met Sally. When Harry Met Sally does take place over the course of like 17 years.
Okay. Well, there's an exception.
Or something.
Well, that's why everyone thinks it's such a great movie.
Yeah. But excluding that.
Because you can buy in a little bit.
Yeah, most romances are short, because that's when you have all the passions in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, and I get that as a storytelling, I don't know, convention, I think, is the word I'm looking for. But I actually... do think more complicated relationships are interesting. I wouldn't mind reading about one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't need yet another form of this short romance. That's how you get, like, The Bachelor, when they're in love at the end because they've been... because everyone's been together, like, in this really intense setting, and the producers are tweaking everyone's emotions the whole time.
Yeah.
So at the end of 6 weeks, they think they are in love, and then 6 months later, they're like,
oh, yeah.
Every time you open your mouth, I want to die.
Yeah. I think I looked up The Bachelor success rating once, just for fun.
Oh.
One ended, The Bachelorette, the first Bachelor ended in marriage, and another one I don't think they were married, but I think that they were still engaged and preparing for a wedding, which is farther than... And then, like, every other... Like, there were 17 or 18 seasons of it or something. And, like, out of all of those, two had been successful relationships. And who knows if that other wedding got called off. Like, I haven't checked it since. Right. So, and there's been another 4 or 5 seasons. I'm sure all of those are...
So everybody imagine your favorite fictional love story and consider that a year later, they're probably not together anymore.
Think of your favorite, think of your favorite 18 fictional love stories. Yeah. One of those couples is going to make it. Let's just turn literature into The Bachelor.
Maybe that's why so many of them end in tragedy, though. Because if you kill one of them off, then the ideal love is preserved forever, Titanic.
I hate God. I could do an entire podcast about how much I fucking hate Titanic.
Tune in next week when we watch Titanic.
And rage!
you know, we never got to the opening of the book.
Yeah.
And let's, so we can touch on the last character we want to.
It does need to happen. I mentioned earlier that Anna has a roommate named Kate. She's a journalist. Presumably, although you wouldn't know that from how terrible she is at it.
Well, it is mentioned numerous times that she has, like, this fierce journalistic streak, and she's just gonna interrogate you. She's so good at gathering information, and she's good at none of those things.
No. I know she's always like, oh, I'm gonna get the Kate Kavanaugh third degree, and then she asks her, like, a question. And it's like, hey, how was it? It was all right. And then she's like, oh, cool, you wanna help me pack? Like, oh, man.
Wow, that is the third degree.
Jeez. Yeah, but the opening of the book, Anna is going to interview Christian because Kate was supposed to. She's, I think, editor of the school paper or something. But she got sick, so she begs Anna to go do the interview for her instead. It's 2 hours away, and Anna says, okay, and she has a list of printed up questions. Okay. Why doesn't Kate ask someone else at the newspaper to interview
her? Like, a journalist?
Like, I don't care how smart you are, if you've never done a journalist-y thing, you don't know how to interview somebody.
Yep.
Like, I have friends who are journalists. I even worked for a newspaper for a while. I couldn't go interview someone, and I've even, like, edited, you know, dozens of newspaper articles.
I mean, I could interview someone, but it would be terrible.
Yeah, I could.
Right?
So, first of all, that's stupid. The questions she's written up are the worst questions in the entire world!
They're so bad!
Like, first of all, she doesn't give Anna any sort of biography or rundown or anything. Like, this is who you're interviewing, this is, like, this is specifically the type of information I want to know from him. This is, like, the research that I've done that you can look at. Like, none of that. Just a sheet of questions. And they're all, like, either really generic or terrible things you would never ask in an interview.
Are you gay, Mr. Gray?
Yeah. One of the questions is, are you gay?
Because no one's ever seen him in public with a woman before.
Yeah. Wow.
But CEO, maybe I just keep my private life private.
Also, is that even remotely relevant to anything?
Yeah, like, it's not, it doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the interview. It's pretty much I gather it's pretty much a fluff piece. Like, hey, you've given a ton of money to our university.
Yeah.
So we're gonna try to, and you're handing out, or you're giving a speech at commencement, so we're gonna have someone interview you for the school paper.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't this be done via email or something?
Yeah. You actually can do that. Or over the phone.
Yep.
Yeah. Are you gay? Totally irrelevant. A reporter would never ask that, by the way. Like, you could get potentially fired for doing that shit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get fired, maybe, like, written up, but, like, they used to say, you know, never mention someone's sexuality in a story ever, unless it's because, you know, they're the president of the LGBT thing and they're throwing this thing because they can, you know, like, only if it's relevant to the story.
Right.
So that was just, like, out of left field. And the other stuff's like, you know, you're so young and have accomplished so much. How did you do it?
He's like, Google me.
Like, what? And like, oh, you were adopted at a young age. What's that about? Like, why would you ask someone that stuff? Yeah, and so, like, her friend, like, Kate's credibility as a journalist is just completely trashed by the end of chapter one.
You're right, it's shattered right off the bat.
Like, wow, I don't know how she managed to get a degree being that terrible at that.
And then aside from being a bad journalist, she's kind of a party girl, but not, like, unusually so.
Yeah, like, my impression was she actually...
Not that interesting either when you boil right down to it. So I think we've reached the part where we're just going to rant about things we didn't like.
We've already kind of been doing that.
Well, but... we've been doing it as we go along, but we have a kind of a list, at least. All right, well, how about kind of still on the in the character arena? Christian hates being touched, and his family is, like, the huggiest family ever.
Yeah. She meets Christian's family, and they're super nice and warm. By the way, so this is an adopted family. He was adopted when he was 4, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he hates being touched, like... cannot connect to, like, he's basically incapable of a relationship is what the end conclusion of the book is, like, he's so emotionally fucked up he can't sustain a relationship,
right?
And he has to do this kind of sex because he's so fucked up. And then his family's all super warm and friendly and outgoing.
Meet my parents. Hi, Anna. Hug. Hi, Anna. Hug. Meet my sister. Glomp.
Yeah. So nice to see you. Hugs. And then his adopted brother's, like, super friendly, yep, goofy guy. She gets along with all of them, I should say, better than she does Christian, because she and Christian fight so much.
Yep.
Yeah, and his explanation, when she presses him about it, he finally says, my mom was a crack whore. That's, by the way, verbatim.
Yep.
And she's like, okay.
She's like, that's heavy, but that, what does that have to do with this?
Like, what about that? And I mean, it's kind of implied that he got abused as a kid.
He certainly didn't have enough to eat because he's obsessed with food.
Yeah.
Which is actually another one of his okay qualities. Not so much the controlling element of it, but he apparently does...
Like, he's trying to give food to starving people.
Yeah, like, that's a really big cause of his.
Yeah. Although I... Again, like, I know that early childhood development's really important, and if you get fucked up when you're 2, like, you're gonna have issues when you're older. But he's adopted by a caring, loving family at 4, so that can help him build trust in, yep, people. They're rich enough that they can send him to therapy, and he has a therapist.
And he sees the therapist regularly.
Yeah, so if he's been going since he was 4... I would feel like he'd be better off, like, he's learned that he can trust his family, he learns that he can have loving relationships with his family, he's been going to a therapist, he hasn't gone hungry in 23 years, like, I'm not saying that it's impossible for him to be as fucked up as he is, but it did feel kind of weird.
I don't even feel like he's all that fucked up. I think we just are supposed to think he is.
And I think the other thing is it's supposed to be the romance is going to save him from his fuck-up.
Right. Well, this is clearly a redemption tale, even though we're only a third of the way through it. Even though it felt like 6 books, it was 1. and he is, you know, a bunch of firsts. Like, he's softening on some of his relationship stances.
Yeah, he's never had vanilla sex ever.
Yep.
Until the first time he has sex with Anna.
Yep. He's never spent the night in the same bed as someone.
Oh, except, like, every night with her.
Yep, except now, like, every night with her.
And he loves it.
He's never had an actual, like, boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, and he's trying to have one with her.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
And it's all so immediate.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, by the end of this, I know where this is going to end up.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that Ben and I have been discussing is... you know, people want to read this book because it's all dark and kinky, but the kink here isn't presented as, like, oh, here, like, go have a sex life that includes, like, bondage and spanking and stuff, but be, like, a not fucked up person and enjoy those fucked up, or those kinky things, because those aren't even fucked up things to want sex.
Right.
And here it's more like, oh, he wants all that stuff in sex because he's messed up.
Right, and there's tons of people. I mean, our brother Ethan made the comment that in the modern, like, in the modern landscape, light bondage is kind of considered par for the course.
Yeah. Like, if someone says, can I handcuff you or tie you to the bed, people are like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, raise your hand if you've ever had your hands bound during a sexual encounter. Like, everyone's at their computer or iPod right now, like, yep.
Yeah, that's me.
Done it. With a necktie or something, yep. All right, let's move past this, you know?
Yeah. And even the people who are into, like, the more hardcore stuff, like, they're not... like, bad people.
Right, they're normal, non-fucked-up people who have a kink they like to play with.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the right way to put it.
Actually, one of the webcomics I read, one of the main characters is, like, a dominatrix on the side. She's, like, into that. But in, like, you know, everyday life, she, like, loves books, and she's a librarian, and she's just, like, a totally normal person.
Right.
And people are always like, you're into... what? It's like, yeah, your local librarian could be into bondage, guys. Like,
it's very possible.
Yeah.
So if the BDSM community is not upset by this trilogy, they damn well should be.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we figured the complaint is, hey, yeah, we do that stuff, but we're not, like, we don't need to be fixed.
I'm 50 Shades of Fucked Up, Hannah.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope you die of it.
By the way, that title's driven home about 12,000 times.
And then Jose, the hilarious racial caricature.
Oh, God. So at first I was like, okay, Jose, Hispanic character. I was actually totally fine with him.
Well, yeah.
Because for like 10 pages, he actually doesn't do anything.
He's a like, dude. Like, he's her friend, like she said.
Yeah, we're... Oh, also, here's another example of telling is... Anna and Jose are supposedly, like, awesome friends, but, like, we never actually see them be friends.
Yep.
And, in fact, we see him trying to force himself on her, which is not friend-like at all, by the way.
No, not friend-like or friendly.
Yeah, that's that seems actually, like, wow, he just sexually assaulted you.
Yep.
And then she's just...
See, Christian was understandably pissed off about that, at least.
That, I was fine with that. Yeah. I was like, if someone's trying to kiss you and you say no and they keep trying to kiss you... that's not okay.
That's when you kick their testicles off.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so for the first, like, 10 pages, well, he's into photography. They're good friends. I was like, he had a crush on her. Okay, fine. That's good. Let's go to the bar. I'm going to buy everyone a pitcher of margaritas. Like, okay. That's, people like margaritas. I'm still good. And then, like, two lines later, Dios mio, Anna. And then, like, single time he talks after that.
Every time he had dialogue after that, he says, Dios mio, at some point.
Yeah, like...
like, oh, Jose.
No!
You were so close to getting to be a person.
Yeah.
You poor man.
He said he's just degraded to crush.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Okay, well, how about amazing virginal sex?
Yeah. So, this is a trope in romance. Someone's a virgin, first time they have sex, it's great. Pretty much every single woman in the world who's ever had sex can tell you that is not the case.
They'll have like two seconds of pain, and then it's awesome, and then there's a little bit of bleeding, but like, that's kind of inconvenient. But it's the 2 seconds of pain, it's like, really? That's all the discomfort involved?
Yeah, it's like, okay... well, first of all, actually, a lot of modern women tend to have less painful first times because most women masturbate. A lot of women use dildos and vibrators before they ever have sex.
Right.
Women who are really, really physically active, like if you ride horses, if you do gymnastics, any of that stuff, you can actually break your hymen on your own doing that sort of stuff.
Right.
Tampons, etc. So... a lot of modern women, when they have sex for the first time, it's actually not as bad because you've already, like, somehow loosened yourself up.
Though Anna has mentioned that she has done none of these things.
Which, by the way, characters who don't masturbate piss me off.
I know.
You can at least touch yourself.
Like, come on!
So that's the first thing. But yeah, even in that case... you're still not used to having something shoved up there. Like, it's still going to be weird and uncomfortable at first. Like, even if you really like the person, even if they've had sex before, they know what they're doing, like, right. All those things. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but in my experience, like, it hurt the entire time. And it wasn't a matter of, like, you know, the guy was being, like, a douche or anything. It was just like, no, this is, like, kind of what has to happen. Mm-hmm. And I can actually feel the good stuff, too. So that, like, reassures me, but you just kind of have to do it, you know? And it's not even necessarily that that all automatically means the second time is going to be...
Right. Well, they got all that out of the way, because they did it, like, 1,000 times on the first day. Yeah.
He takes her virginity, then immediately flips over, has sex with her again. And then, like, the next day, they're, like, doing it more.
Yep.
And I was like, how is her vagina not black and blue right now?
For that matter, like, the last day, they fucked, like, 6 times.
Yeah. In, like, 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, you just lost your virginity, like, 2 weeks ago. Also, that's a lot of times for people who have sex a lot.
I know, they're both, like, invincible sex robots.
Yeah, Christian, it must be a robot, because it's like, oh, we just finished. Oh, I still have an erection, and apparently more semen, so I can do it again with you immediately.
Let's get it on out of here.
Yeah, and then, like, 2 hours later, oh, I'm ready again. I'm like, I don't know any guy with that much stamina. That's ridiculous.
Oh, speaking of insane sex things, here's something that pissed me off. The first time his penis was described, it was using the phrase considerable length.
Yeah.
So add that to the list of fucking perfection.
Also, if Anna's never masturbated, doesn't watch porn, never had sex, never seen a guy's, how does she know?
That's true. Good point. It just looks big to her.
Yeah.
So
maybe I can
relax a little.
Yeah, maybe it's average. I don't know.
I don't know. To her, they would all seem considerable, probably.
Oh, that was another thing that made me think Christian was a prick. It's like the first time he like showed his dick to her. He's like, "This is my favorite body part. Treat it well." And I was like, "You are the worst person in the entire world."
It's a good body part. Shouldn't be your favorite.
You shouldn't tell someone that. Like, this is my favorite because I'm going to have sex with you constantly.
Check this out.
Yeah,
it's
like,
amazing.
Amazing virginal sex though. Ben did want to issue a.
Yes, I wanted to issue a challenge to the listeners out there. If anyone wants to write us a graphic 50 Shades of Grey-esque sex scene featuring realistic virginal sex, please send it to our email, which is novelideaspodcast@gmail.com, which you'll hear again at the end of this episode.
We will even consider reading it out loud.
We will consider doing that, or definitely, like, if I get a couple of good ones, throwing them up on the website.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll write one, too.
It's just, and even, like, realistic, like, I actually didn't think the sex that they were having, like, aside from the fact that she'd never had any, like, for two people having sex, like, sex scenes felt pretty believable to me.
Oh, yeah, I didn't have,
it wasn't like
the writing.
So amazingly, like, yeah, like, that was actually all pretty much okay. It was just the fact that she'd never had sex before.
Right, or that they were doing it, like, 7 times in 3 hours or something.
Yeah, like, like,
that was the issue I had. So, yes, I'm looking for something awkward and painful, but not necessarily just disgusting.
Yeah, and maybe not, like, incredibly painful. Oh, also, women who are virgins, when they have sex for the first time, don't necessarily bleed. B-T-Dubs.
Enough of them do. I'm not going to nitpick that.
Oh, I am.
Oh, God. Here is something I just could not get over. And that's in one of the final sex scenes. He says, he's basically like, well, I'm going to make it so the only sense you have left is feeling. And then he blindfolds her and puts earbuds on. And he's like, you're going to be listening to music, so you're not going to see me or hear me. And she's like, oh, wow, geez, because that's what she does. And then, apropos of nothing, I hope it's not rap. What? Where did that come from?
Yeah, seriously, it's just like, I hope it's not rap, and then just like moves on.
Yeah, like, okay. What? I was fixated on that for probably a chapter and a half. Like, I could not get over it.
I noticed it and laughed because you had already told me about it. I was like, you've listened to this man's music. Is he a guy who's into rap?
That was part of it, I think.
So he's playing Chopin on the piano. He told you he likes a freaking Tudor composer.
Right, he likes Thomas Tallis, who, let me tell you, as somebody who, well, doesn't have the piece of paper, but has the credit hours of 1 3/4 master's degrees in music, Thomas Tallis is a little obscure, even for us, okay?
Yeah, actually the only reason I knew who he was is because I watched The Tudors.
So, I mean, this isn't a guy who, I mean, he says his taste is eclectic because he, I guess, listens to some classic rock in addition to classical music. No, he did listen to something modern, but I can't remember what it was.
No, she played.
No, there was something else modern that he actually had playing at one point. Oh, okay. I just can't remember what it was. It was some borderline indie band that E.L. James probably likes to listen to.
Okay.
Anyway, this is not a man who's likely to suddenly, like, go hardcore rap on you. Especially, like, to get off, I mean.
Yeah, and he says, like, he's gonna be listening to it, too.
Right, in some ways it could work better, though, because there's a beat.
Yeah, actually. Like, probably better than Thomas Tallis.
Well, this 40-part Thomas Tallis motet, like, that is insane. That is not even music intended to be listened to. That is a composer whipping his dick out and spooging all over his score like, look how amazing I am! I can do this in 40 parts! Like, come on! Write it in 4 parts. Write it in 8 if you're feeling ambitious. 40 is way over the top.
Yeah.
That's like the musical equivalent of a Proust novel or something. Like, here is 10,000 pages of nothing.
Enjoy it. Yeah. The other thing that I found to be obnoxious is that Christian, like, never calls her baby ever. And then when they're having sex, every single sentence he says ends with the word baby. Like, it's apparently the only word he can use when he's feeling hot.
It is the only endearment he has. It's the only endearment anyone has.
Yeah. And he pretty much only uses when they're having sex. Can you feel me inside, you baby? I'm gonna go harder now, baby. I'm like, that's not even the appropriate context to use the word baby in. Like, why don't you say her name? Or, like, don't say baby at the end of every sentence.
He says her name when he comes sometimes. For what it's worth.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Christian Grey, miraculous.
We need to start wrapping this up.
Oh, I did have one other thing. The fact that his last name is Grey, and then when she said he had gray eyes, Gray, like,
uh-oh.
The disconnect made me go, I don't.
You're like, choose one.
No. That's kind of beside the point. Yeah, okay, we'll start wrapping it up. So, strengths and weaknesses with the writing, Ben.
Okay, well, basically, here's the deal. It is I'd say, solidly well-written commercial novel as far as the prose goes.
Yeah.
There are some tics, especially in Anna's inner monologue, that are really annoying.
Yeah.
But not horrible examples of how to write. Like, it's not grammatically horrific.
No.
She uses reasonable language. There are, like, a half dozen vocabulary words that no one has ever spoken before.
Yeah.
Sprinkled in there, but not on every page, so it's not like she ate and crapped out a thesaurus. Except for one thing, and that's the email exchanges, which are supposed to be witty, and
are horrible.
If you can't write humor, don't try to fucking write humor.
Yeah. There are plenty of authors who only have a couple of funny lines occasionally who are fantastic authors.
Yes, you don't have to be funny.
And when you try to be funny and it comes across as, like, bad, that's even worse.
There are multiple long and painful email exchanges full of what are supposed to be one-liners and entendre and innuendo, and are just painful. None of it is something that any real person would ever write, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because actually some of my favorite writers do not write dialogue that sounds even remotely like something a normal human would say. Aaron Sorkin, Quentin Tarantino, both come to mind as far as screenwriters go.
Yeah.
Heinlein, for that matter, too. But, like, it comes across as snappy and zippy and zazzy and whatever word, but just these are, it's tortured. It's like somebody trying really hard to be funny who is not even remotely funny.
Yeah, and there are a lot of them.
Oh,
like, just. Most of their talking to each other, actually, is through email.
And they're they're long. They're numerous and they're long. It's just pages and pages of one-line emails with,
yeah,
you know, there's a joke that's supposed to be in the subject header, and then innuendo in the body, and then occasionally Christian will alter his signature slightly.
I'm like, hey, send the fucking text.
Oh, my God, it's annoying.
But please don't post the text message.
It was actually breaking me. I reached towards, like, in the last third of the book, when they had an email exchange, I was actually speaking aloud to the book. This is name-calling. I could not deal with it anymore.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely the worst part of their writing, is the email exchanges. The sex scenes, again, pretty good.
Yeah.
Nothing, the only major distracting thing is the my sex instead of her vagina.
Oh, and also in the first series of sexual encounters when she's blowing him and she refers to him as a Christian Grey flavored popsicle.
Yeah, that's just awful.
Like, it just completely derailed it.
That's just terrible. It is not. It's nothing like a popsicle.
That was a really bad line.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So yeah, cut that shit out. So again, the context relevance is just because they're so popular right now. But you know, we think it must be like the dark sexuality that's luring people in.
I just assume it has something to do with masturbation.
yeah, people are using it for the spank bank. We don't really know. We did give the book props for the fact that it actually does end up with Anna breaking up with Christian.
Which, again, I appreciated.
Yeah, me too. Like, she stood up for herself. That was too fucked up for her. Which I understand. So if a guy was smacking me as hard as he could, I would not stay with him.
Well, most importantly, both of them were shattered emotionally, and I didn't want them to ever have happiness again at that point. So it was really important.
Ben's just diabolical.
I am diabolical. My favorite character was Charlie Tango, the helicopter. And the only way I could have liked Charlie better is if he had crashed and killed all three of them.
Committed suicide. So our questions for this series are...
Oh my God, do they get back together?
Yes.
Us, presumably.
Yeah, we guess.
Does Christian stop being fucked up?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Presumably.
Presumably.
That's the... They're gonna break up, they're gonna get back together, he's gonna work on it. They're probably gonna end up being in love in a happy relationship with a little bit of bondage thrown in. That's my guess.
Yeah. I have a question. Does anything that I find interesting ever happen in the next 1,000 pages of this series?
She's gonna start working at a publishing house. Does her new boss try to hit on her?
Probably.
Yeah, probably, because every male in the fucking world does.
Does Charlie ever find a brilliant female helicopter to hook up with?
Does her dad, Ray, ever actually be interesting or interested in her? That's what I want to know. So, Ben, what'd you think?
Well, golly, I loved it. Couldn't you tell? I fucking hated this book. It was almost physically painful.
Actually, through the first half, I didn't think it was, like, the most god-awful thing in the entire world. By the end, I was very bored. I'm not sure, because I don't read enough romance. If you like romance, you might want to check it out.
But I can't tell. I haven't really read anything in the genre. I would imagine this is not the greatest example of it.
Yeah, but we don't... I mean, it's not really our expertise. So...
I'm just going to tell you, if you like my reading list and my comments usually, then this probably isn't your book.
Yeah, and if you like... a lot of the things we like, then you probably won't want to read this. What are you reading right now?
Oh, let's see. I just finished Grave Peril by Jim Butcher, which is part of the Dresden Files, and I'm moving on to the next one, which I think is called A Summer Night. Probably Night with a K.
Yeah.
Because that's what he likes to do. So, once again, for those of you who missed my previous description, it's basically a hard-boiled PI story if the PI was also a wizard.
And I'm not really reading anything right now because I'm busy with shit.
She was so busy she only got to read 50 Shades last week.
Haha, yay. So, if you want to contact us, check out our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
Or you can email us, especially if you write me a true virginal sex scene at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
You can contact us on Twitter at novelideaspod. You can check out Ben's hilarious Twitter feed.
Yeah, I don't update it a lot, but I live tweeted 50 Shades and I think doubled our tweet count in a single week.
Yeah. You can also find us on iTunes.
On iTunes, yeah. And if you're an iTunes listener, please leave reviews, leave comments. That affects our stuff there in some way that I don't fully understand.
Yeah, thanks
yet.
To everyone who has. We're doing well. Yeah, so next week we are changing tactics completely.
Yes, we're going to another bestseller, but this time one we like. Game of Thrones by George R.R. Martin.
Affectionately referred to as GURM.
As GURM.
We've both already read it, but we're reading it again, and the conversation will be very, very different. That's my guess.
There'll be far less violent hatred next week.
Well, maybe towards Joffrey.
Well, Joffrey. But... yeah, let's not get into that. I can do 10 minutes on punching Joffrey in the face. So, I guess that's all for this week, and laters, baby.
That's what I was going to say, you dick! Damn it!
By the way, when laters, baby, passes... for witty repartee, your book is bad.